It's Learning to Listen with Quinn, Naomi, and Charlie.
Hell yeah. Welcome to L2L, the Learning to Listen podcast. Yeah, we're talking about music and the way we listen to music. We're trying to engage with the music we listen to. We're all about the lost art of engaged listening. So that's why we're talking about albums and consuming the album as a whole artistic statement.
Yum, the way
artists intended. So yeah, this is not a biography show. So look else for that. I mean, there might be some insights and whatnot, but no, instead, this is a pure guttural and visceral reaction to the music we are listening to. So of course, I am your host, Quinn Clark. With me, as always, is DJ Charlie Scream. Yeah, right on. Turning this into a morning zoo. Nicely done, Charlie. And then, of course, Naomi Carmack, our 90s nostalgia expert, wearing her reddest red lipstick today. Because we are going to be talking about Taylor Swift's 2012 album, Red. Yeah, we're doing Rolling Stone's 100 Greatest Albums of All Time. Thanks, Charlie. Thanks. That's not annoying yet. According to their top 500 list from 2012, it turns out it's also been amended for whatever reason in 2020. But I think that version's only online. I don't think they printed that version. But we're more or less using the list from 2012. So if you got a physical copy of that, look that up. But if you go online, that'll be the most recent version. So, yeah. But before we get on with that, of course, patreon.com/learningtolisten. That's where you can really help us out. Mm-hmm. Look, for the price of a cup of coffee a day, you can feed a starving podcaster. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. You can really help us out. But here's the thing. Not only are you going to be helping us out, we're going to be giving back to you. We put the episodes out early. We put them out with extra bonus content, raw, uncut, and unedited. Ooh. And also, there's lots of extra stuff on there, too, that isn't going to see the light of day anywhere else. So if you want to check it out, you got to go to patreon.com/learningtolisten. Plus, we're going to be archiving the first 99-ish episodes. And they're only going to be living on one place. That's going to be patreon.com/learningtolisten. So make sure you go there to check it out. Okay. You guys ready to get into the album?
Let's do it.
Okay. So the album, like I said, is Taylor Swift's 2012 Red. It's her fourth studio album. It was released in October of 2012. Apparently, the album's title refers to what Swift described as a tumultuous red emotions that were evoked from the unhealthy romance she was experiencing during the album's conception. So, this is number 99 out of 500, but we're focusing on the top 100. We just talked about the band and their first album, Music from Big Pink. Right immediately after that is Red by Taylor Swift. Okay. We'll get into it. Let me just ask you guys first. How aware of this album were you before the assignment to listen to it?
Go ahead, Charlie.
Oh, okay. I'd heard the singles. That's about it. I'd heard the singles. I never heard the whole album.
Right. Like, but, you know, if somebody was like, oh, you know, that Taylor Swift album Red, would you even know that those singles came off that album?
No, I would not be able to match the singles to the album because I've never really followed Taylor Swift very much at all, except for, you know, the singles that are on.
Right. Okay. Naomi, what about you?
I'm kind of in the same boat where I knew some of the songs that were on the radio, but I didn't know which album they would have come from. And a couple of those would be like, I Know You Were Trouble or... Mm-hmm. And I mean, I was talking about this with Charity too, but I always remember those goat screaming goat videos. They always make me think of that Taylor Swift song. I mean, thank you.
Wait, hold on. Did she do a duet with Stevie Nicks?
Yes. Do you remember that time?
She did.
Remember
she
that
did
time
do
she tried to sing Orion or whatever? Is that, what's that song
called? Yeah, at the Grammys, right?
With Stevie Nicks? Oh.
And Stevie Nicks, who is already sometimes like, yeah, compared to a goat singing, blew Taylor Swift out of the water. in that.
One thing we should get out of the way right off the bat here is that I'm never going to think Taylor Swift's a great vocalist.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
I think she's a fantastic songwriter. I do not think she's a good vocalist.
Well, yeah, we'll get into it more. I was just going to say, similar to you guys, I'm never followed her career. I've never been a fan. So, you know, if you said the album Red, I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't know the name of any of her. Maybe I know her like 1989.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to name, if somebody was like, name a Taylor Swift album, and not because I know any of the songs on it, just because that's the one that, for whatever reason, the publicity reached me where I was like, oh, this marketing, I recognize, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I don't know why that one out of... I couldn't even... We did a staff picks where, Naomi, you recommended her latest records.
I did that. Yep.
I still can't name them. I could not name them off the top of my head right
now. Folklore and Evermore.
Right. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I want to check them out just because I want to see where she's gone from now, from there. From here, 2012's Taylor Swift. But yeah, so I'm assuming that we're all in the same boat here. This is our first listen through.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Naomi, true. Well, Naomi, I remember we've talked about it before, and you have said that you kind of actively disliked Taylor Swift.
Oh, yeah, I did for a long time.
For a few reasons. And you came around on these latest records.
Yeah.
That's why I'm really curious to hear them. But yeah, I've got to say, like, my only real experience with Taylor Swift pre-2012, I don't know what album was. I don't remember exactly what year, but I think her first record came around 2006, 2007. So sometime in there, around there, maybe it was her second record. I was working on this crew that the foreman would only let us listen to the local pop country station, which everybody here knows is Kiss and FM. But, you know, just top 40 country of the day, right?
Yeah.
And her song 15 was on that rotation. And we started work between 7:30 and 8 o'clock in the morning and wrapped up like sometime late afternoon, 4:30, 5 o'clock. And I would hear that fucking song 5 times throughout the day. Like clockwork, you hear all the same songs, right? But for the most part, most of it, like even though it was annoying, I'm like, fuck this stupid song again. That song in particular drove me nuts. Her voice to me on that song, because that's the one I remember. I don't know what the rest of the albums sounded like. Was like nails on a chalkboard to me. Like, it just made me upset to hear it. Like, she would start saying, when you're 15 and somebody tells you they love you, you're going to believe them. I was like,
is that Simple Plan or is that...
It does sound like Simple Plan, but that's the same melody from the song. I remember it clearly because it's, you know, when you just hate follow something, you know, I didn't follow it, but I just was like, it's on again, mom. And then it's like, yeah, I try to exercise that team. Anyway, hated it. Hated that song, hated her voice, hated it. Like, just really disliked it. There was like a noon hour request that was the only reprieve from the day where like people would actually request some decent songs once in a blue moon, and they'd play like 1 hour of, you know, not just, I don't know, I'm trying to think of what else. Like, that's the thing, is that song overshadowed anything else that was getting played at the time. Like, so I don't even remember other hits, country hits at the time. But for whatever reason, I think mostly because I could just block them out as background noise, that one I couldn't. It got through. So yeah, anyway. So I've never sat down and listened to a Taylor Swift album because I've never had the desire to, because I just was like, I don't see the appeal of Taylor Swift other than young and blonde and whatever. And maybe that's writing her off and that's not fair, right?
Well, I thought maybe I was just judging a book by its cover too, you know? Mm-hmm. So sometimes I've tried to like dig in and see if there's more substance there, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's what this experiment is all about us listening to albums and talking to people about the albums that they grew up with and fell in love with and that sort of thing, right? Is like, you know, that whole concept of engaged listening is like, it's like, let's open our minds a little. Let's go out of our comfort zones and learn, you know, like about music. So here we are. We sat down, we listened to this record. Before we move on at all, like, I don't know, Charlie, were you just indifferent to Taylor Swift? Did you have any opinions about Taylor Swift going into this?
I mean, enough that I liked the singles, like not just these singles, but like her singles in general. I've liked them, you know,
like
not even, like a huge
pre this, pre 2012.
No. I just mean, actually, no, not any of the country stuff, more of just like the pop stuff. But I sometimes forget about this, but this, and then listening to this again today reminded me, I've got a bit of a soft spot for some like super sugary pop kind of music, but some, a good chunk of the time. So something like this, you know, it works for me in my brains. It makes my brains feel nice.
Okay, well, let's get into it then, because I've got to say right off the top here is that I gave this thing the solid college effort. I listened to it three times through, and even by the end of the third time, I'm like, all I could like really think about it was, I am not the target demographic for this. This is not for me. It's not meant for me. It doesn't mean that I couldn't get something from it, but from the songwriting process to the production to the marketing to just the album in general, this is not aimed at it wasn't aimed at me in 2012, and it's still not really aimed at me now. Obviously it's not like somehow the marketing would come around. It's like, it's not like I got younger and like became a teenage girl or something, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm trying to look at it through that lens and be as like subjective as possible, but it's tough. Cause I'm just like, this is just a product that's made for somebody else. It just 100% is, right? It's not aimed at me, you know? So no, there's not that there's anything that I couldn't take from it, but it's just like, I don't know, if you don't like, what's a good example of something that's like, doesn't mean it's bad, just means it's not for you? Or do you need an example? Like, is that just the statement?
No, that explains itself.
Basically blanket anything, really.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, okay, how about this? Like, maybe this is a bad analogy, but I want to say it's like if you have an allergy to, you know, a certain type of food, it's like...
I don't think that's the same kind of thing.
Maybe it's not. I don't know. Yeah, that's bad.
Allergy isn't the same as you not liking Taylor Swift.
I kind of feel like it. I don't know.
No, yeah, he's not gonna die from Taylor Swift.
But I kind of break out in hives when I hear her voice.
No, you don't. You don't need an EpiPen when you listen to pop music.
Oh, but my ears feel awful afterwards. Okay, yeah, you're right. It's not the same. Okay.
Yeah, not everyone likes screamo music. Good comment there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. Yeah. People with taste. Okay, anyway, moving on.
Well, is this thing on?
So it's funny that we mentioned the fact that it's like pop music was the idea of this album, that it was supposed to be this move away from a country sound to a more pop sound. But her country music was very poppy. Like, it's literally pop country music. So transitionally, I hear it in like 3 to 4 songs that I'm like, okay, those are the ones that stand out that are different on this album. Otherwise, this is still 80%, 75 to 80%, still pretty much just a pop country record.
See, here's the biggest thing I had during this era of Taylor Swift to wrap around my head was the fact that she would go to all awards shows. Grammys, American Music Awards, Pop, Billboard, AMAs, CCMAs, CMAs, and win everything with pop music. She's winning country awards with pop music. And that made me so fucking mad, because I thought, there's people who are actually making country music while you're making a pop record.
Well,
and they're not winning those awards. Pick a lane. This is how I felt. But then I reminded myself, I was a huge Shania Twain fan. What is the difference there? So I had to check myself before I wrecked myself. Well, and go, there's really not a difference.
Well, it's ever since sometime in the 80s. Well, okay. There's always been this, like, here's the thing, because the biggest markets, country has traditionally, like in the past, like traditional country music was actually a fairly niche market. It was mostly regional hits, that sort of thing. And artists who broke out of that would have what you would call back in the day a crossover hit. And so you might have a song like think of like white sports coat by Marty Robbins, right? You know, a white sports coat and a pink carnation, right? Now, that was a huge crossover hit. It got him on the pop charts and got him international recognition, while it was also successful on the more niche country charts at the time. But the thing is, the country charts were, like I said, more limited by regional success. So they would sell, you know, in the tens to maybe best hundreds of thousands, but they wouldn't sell a million, right? So if you could get into a market like that, that would sell a million, like, you know, the first records to go gold and platinum and stuff like that. Like the very first country record that went, I think, gold or sold a million copies wasn't until in the 70s. Mm-hmm. Right. And country music as a genre had been around since the 40s as like, you know, an established like charting, recognized, you know, genre. So think about that, they've always been chasing pop music success because it's the way for them to be relevant and compete in that market, right? Now, every once in a while, they get lucky, and like in the 70s, there was kind of a cowboy cool thing where people wanted real authenticity in their country music, and, you know, but then the 80s happened, and then
bought by Dan Seals.
Yeah, or a band like Alabama, right? Think about them and how poppy they really were.
There's a lot of pop country in the 80s.
But here's the thing is, like, when we look back, it's like because they established themselves as a country band and sold their music under the title of country, even though they were chasing this pop crossover success, we look back and we go, well, that's country, right? Mm-hmm. And then the same thing happens. A few years, you know, a decade goes by, and now Garth Brooks uses what's more or less rooted in country sound, but like adds that like country rock or that like stadium rock kind of sound, takes a lot of lessons from like,
well, his was, he was raised on Kiss.
Yeah. He, you he, know, yeah. Well, yeah. Well, listen, I don't know anybody who has only one kind of music in their record collection, you know, like I get it. Like I like to blend genres. I like what I like, you know, if I, if I want to mash up Dolly Parton and Black Sabbath, I'm going to do it.
Oh yeah. And I think his whole goal was to just take that and put it in an arena, you know, take that whole thing and create the whole like experience.
But when he started selling records, that where he wasn't just selling records to country fans, he's selling records to pop fans, he's selling records to everybody, then he really, really like put that idea of getting that like getting a more pop sound on country radio into overgear. And then that's the era of the Shania Twains and so on and so forth. And then you end up with a Florida Georgia Line down the road, right? Is everybody, here's the thing, is because you're always chasing it, you're always a little bit behind, so you're never really relevant. And this is what I noticed, it's really funny about this record, listening to it now, I'm like, the really poppy songs on this record, this is 2012, this is 10 years ago almost, like 9 years ago, country radio right now sounds so much like the super poppy songs on this record, you know, it's like, God, it's like they're so far, like they're trying their best, but I think there's a thing where they also kind of appeal in a weird nostalgic way. I've noticed that with like, you have these like weird, like outdated hip hop influences on country music radio now. You have like hand claps instead of snares. You have a lot of auto-tune all of a sudden. It's like, yeah, guys, auto-tune was hot in like 2012, but this is 2021, like
way earlier, you know, than that.
Yeah. Oh, and there's auto-tune all over this record, by the way. Like there's times she sounds like a goddamn singing robot. drives me nuts. Not like in that T-Pain way where they're using it for effect, but it's like, we got to correct the pitch on a few things here and there, right? Like,
but I do think that there was a real confusion in direction on genre on this album. And I mean, I'm not one to say you have to I literally just said that you have to pick a lane.
Yeah, pick a lane. Pick a lane, Naomi. Pick a lane. Pick a lane on picking a lane.
Hey, look at this flip-flopper here, huh? Are you trying to be a politician or what?
It's a flip-flop.
No.
I have like a pros and cons list about Taylor Swift, so.
Okay, well, let's get into it. But if you do you have literally have a pros and cons list, or just
you can, is it like right in front of you, like you're looking at it right now?
It's literally things about her that I like and things about her that I dislike.
Well, okay.
Is that wrong?
No.
Is that really Mean Girls?
No, no. Let's do it. Before we do it, I was going to say, see, what's interesting about this record is that because, yeah, it's getting kind of lauded as this, like, this is the moment that she broke away from, like, her pop country chains and threw them aside and became a pop star or whatever. But when you look this album up on, you know, whatever streaming service, because I didn't have a copy of this record, so I had to stream it, it's under country.
I know. Yeah. And it irritates me because it's not country.
Yeah, and then apparently I looked it up, and yeah, she was winning Grammy Awards in this era for pop records. And, you know, and then you, like, you've talked to me and Charlie about this before, and you've always been like, yeah, you guys don't really pay attention to like, that top 40 country world. And, like, yeah, this is why. Because why would we? It's like, we like country music. We don't like this. We don't like, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, like, I'll let Charlie speak for himself about the record, but you know what I mean? And I'm talking in big general terms, right? Like, we're not fans of Florida Georgia Line, you know? Like, you know, we played on the same stage as Big and Rich. We weren't excited to open for Big and Rich. You know, we weren't like, believe?
Okay, not for the reason of opening for Big and Rich, but for the reason of opening for a big act and also getting to see what they were like behind the scenes. I was excited for that.
Yeah, but yeah, yeah. To see like the things working, like, yeah, the gears working behind the scenes and you know, be in that world a little bit. Yeah. But there was no part of us that was like, I don't know which one's Big and which one's Rich. Like, no, you know, we weren't going like, I can't wait to get my Big and Rich, like, you know, Honky Tonk Badonka Donk single signed.
That's not even their song, but
I don't know. I mean, it might as well be their song, right? What is their song? No, their song is Ride a Horse. Ride a Cowboy, Save a Horse. I don't know.
Here's a good point. Nothing is really pure country anymore, just like nothing is pure rock or pure blues.
You guys have not been listening. Mixed,
and it works to build an audience. This is a quote here.
Yes, I see. I totally get that point. There is definitely artists out there. They're not getting the radio play, though. You got to, like, do your digging and do your due diligence. There are... Man, I can show you some artists who there is no arguing that they're like.
I would agree with that comment about popular music. About what's, but not about what's all being made out there.
Yeah, but that's what I'm talking about too. I'm like,
yeah,
you're not gonna hear, like, who knows? Maybe there'll be a taste for it. Like, there was in the late '80s, there was that movement of what they called neo-traditionalists, guys like Dwight Yoakam, Randy Travis. Those guys who were making a country sound that was very reminiscent of, like, 40s, 50s, 60s country, maybe with some 80s production and a little updated in that way, but the songwriting was very much, like, very much a more traditional country sound. And you know what's crazy about them? They all started playing in punk rock clubs, you know? To think about that, Dwight Yoakam started playing in California, L.A., like, punk rock clubs. And what was considered at the time the cowpunk scene. Katie Lang came out of a similar thing, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
She was called a cowpunk in the 80s here in Edmonton. So, you know, and that's so funny to think that real country is kind of punk rock. Like, you would never think that the two go hand in hand. But it's because when you're just the opposite of what the mainstream thing is, that's kind of punk rock, right? Like, you subvert the mainstream. So, I mean, unfortunately, there hasn't been much of a taste for that kind of sound since, like, maybe the early 90s at the earliest, right? Like, people who had built fan bases lasted for a while. Like, Dwight Yoakam, obviously, was putting out hit records into the 90s. Alan Jackson was another one who was doing it, you know. Mm-hmm. But that was probably the last heyday of that, like, more traditional country sound. And then sometime around the time that Lone Star started putting out records in the 90s, and then, you know, you start getting your Taylor Swifts and so on. Like, so that brings us back to Taylor Swift, right?
Yeah.
So I would say that the idea of her, like, stepping away and making pop records is, like, she's already making pop records. So I don't really think it's that big of a move. I don't really see why it would be so...
I always felt like maybe she was a pop artist that paraded or had her roots in country, but she was really deep down just, like, desiring to do pop sound.
Yeah, like, it was all marketing, right? Like,
because,
like,
when I say she's a skilled songwriter, I mean, like, she really does have the gift of the hook.
Well, she apparently wrote something like 25 songs for this album. And then with her producer, songwriting partner, Nathan Chapman, right? He's written on the vast majority of Taylor Swift songs. I'm not sure up till now, but at this point he had. And then in this record, she brought on a couple of new producers. One that you'll definitely be familiar with, Naomi, because you've definitely seen his name on a bunch of records that, that are near and dear to your heart from the 90s, Max Martin.
Yeah.
Max Martin, who produced like the Backstreet Boys. He's a Swedish producer. He produced pop records. And that's another thing that's what, you know, I'm talking about. It's funny, right? Because we're talking about this, like these country artists chasing this pop sound, but they, for whatever reason, they look backwards. And instead of going with what's current, they go with what's kind of old news. But I think it works in a weird way where it's like you get the audience that was like, I was listening to the Backstreet Boys in the 90s. And now I hear a similarity between them and Taylor Swift in the 2000s. I'm, you know, maybe a little older. Maybe I'm, you know, I'm taking the kids to soccer practice, whatever it is. And I hear this on the radio and I'm like, yeah, this is kind of familiar. But they also employed Shellback, and Shellback at this point was a young guy with his finger on the pulse. He was a guy that was kind of prevalent in the, what do you call it? What's that stupid
dubstep?
And that's the freshest thing. It's weird to think that dubstep at this point in 2012 was kind of fresh.
Well, you know? It was just hitting the mainstream ears.
Yeah, totally. Like, this is probably around the same time that Turn Down for What was like hitting the air, right? Now, I would say Turn Down for What leans into the dubstep a lot harder, you know. Like, you know, this is no like Skrillex dubstep. This is dubstep light.
Well, this is pop radio dubstep. This is just, this is pop radio everything. This is pop radio country, pop radio dubstep, pop radio just pop. That's what it is.
Yeah. So here's how it's been always been interesting about dubstep to me is that it's weird to think of it as a genre because it's really just a sound. It's a noise, you know?
It's that sound when the cat hits the springy thing that's the door stopper on the back of the wall. It's that sound.
It would be like saying that like steel drum music is its own genre. You know, it's like, yeah, you can play music on a steel drum, but
I mean, have you really gone on much of a dubstep deep dive?
Yeah, and it's electronic music that has a certain sound. Like, I get it, like what it is. It's like, you know, there's a certain beat to certain things. Like, you can really subcategorize things, but in this case, it's purely just the wub sound, right? Like, and they're like, it's got dubstep. It's like, yeah, it's like, and a guitar has a distortion pedal, you know, like it's used as a sound effect, not like here's a dubstep song. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. So dubstep is not a genre, it's a sound?
Well, I understand the like the idea of dubstep being a genre because it has like any genre, what is that, right? Like it's just like the tropes and instrumentation. You know, maybe like when I say tropes, it's like, oh, you know, like reggae is always in off time, right? Like it's an offbeat. You know, you can't write a reggae song and straight ahead like 4/4, like, you know, beat on the like 2 and 4, right? Like that's not reggae. Reggae is like the beats on the 1 and the 3, right? Like, but
that's the definition
like,
of.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying that's how you build a genre is you just have recognizable tropes and, you know, like, and stuff like that. And so with dubstep, it's like, yeah, there's definitely recognizable tropes within it. But the most number one recognizable trope is that wub, 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 wub sound. You know, like, it's like, I don't know, it's like traditional country music without, like, a fiddle and a steel. Like, you know, I feel like it's kind of like Taylor Swift. Like, yeah, the two records before or three records before this one, it's like you're going to hear more mandolin and maybe a little steel and mostly a lot of more fiddle. Mm-hmm. And then this record, they're like, eh, we left some of that instrumentation off. Not totally. There was a banjitar, like, on one song, and that gross.
No, but I was going to say, what kind of country elements did you see in this album, both of you? Like, did you find anything that sounded in any way traditional country in it? Like, any moments?
I heard little, like, I don't know, whiffs of a little pseudo-country kind of instrumentation. What was in a couple of the songs. And I don't think those were the ones I necessarily liked the most, but...
Mm-hmm. Well,
but like
okay,
just every now and then. But that's what I think this album is more. It's more of like, it was more like a scattergun for genre, right? It was just like, oh, we're gonna try this, we're gonna try this, we're gonna try a little bit of this on this song, just whatever worked, right?
Yeah, I mean, production wise, what I noticed is that there's definitely a slight identity crisis on this album, right? You know, I like, but I'm all for that, like. You know, try stretch, like, you know, like stretch your legs out and try a few different things on, try a different genre, like have fun, like explore music. That's, I'm totally behind that. But I definitely have to say that the Martin and Shellback songs, which were for sure, I think 22, I Knew You Were Trouble, and We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together, which are the most poppy songs, the most like radio, and they were the singles. I think they were all in that order. I think they were like the singles off this album that they sold. They're the best songs on the album, right? I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think so. I did like the opener, that State of Grace song, but it had this like a Kings of Leon almost type of feel to it. I thought that was kind of cool, but I think the hits were selected as the singles for a reason.
Yeah, there was something
they were properly
like,
chosen. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's weird. Yeah, and that's the thing. It's funny that the rest of this record is more middle of the road, kind of safe, you know, production wise. It's not leaning too heavy one way or the other. Even like I've read a few things that were like, oh, influences from like Britpop and stuff like that. And I'm like, no. I don't know about that. I didn't really hear.
Yeah, but I feel like
I just heard middle of the road, like, you know, kind of like mostly ballady, you know, like.
Yeah, but I get that kind of, if she's the one, or if whoever the team was the one who decided, who was like, you know, kind of a, like a little bit of a Brit poppy thing, because I do that with songs where I write guitar and I'm like, yeah, it's kind of got like a Jimmy Page kind of thing to it, right? And then like I'll mention something like that to you and you're like, I didn't think it sounded like that at all. But in my head, just something I'm doing makes it kind of feel like a Jimmy Page lick to me. So I'm like, yeah, no, it's like a Led Zeppelin, Jimmy Page kind of thing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
No, that's a country song. What are you talking about?
No, I can understand.
I think it's
that.
Like it's that kind of thing, right? Where maybe they were like a little bit more gain, a little bit more with the way the hooks are or whatever, and boom, you got Britpop kind of thing.
Yeah, I can kind of understand that, except that I didn't get these from like the publicity side of things. I got these from reviews of the album, you know? And I think it's weird because I think people who were reviewing the album at the time, like it got mixed reviews. You know, it wasn't like it was a hit record. It sold millions of copies. Like people ate it up, especially based on the singles. But people like who sat down and reviewed the record at the time, I think were struggling to be like, well, what is she trying to do? And they were looking a little too deep into it. I think for the most part, like, you know, apparently she wrote 25 songs going into this. You know, and then hired these guys to maybe like she's got writing credits on all these songs. So at least at the very least, they're her words. Right.
I would never doubt for a second that she wasn't heavily.
Well, she can only seem to write about one thing, but we'll get into that. In a minute.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, yeah, you can tell, though, there's producers at the reins, though. Right. Because like 22, I Knew You Were Trouble and We Are Never, Ever Getting Back Together. Probably wouldn't sound the way they did if it wasn't for Max Martin and Shellback, right? You know, if it was still just her and Nathan Chapman, which is pretty much what the rest of the record is. It's like, that's just, I don't know. It's, I can see why since then, or for like the couple records after that, like she leaned much, much more in that direction too, right?
Oh, which is
like,
how this is actually a transition album, because it goes from that one sound and then they try and, you know, test the waters with some new stuff with some new producers and stuff, and those things really worked. So hey,
maybe it was all part of
that. We're going over here.
Maybe so it was all part of a big scheme that was all planned out for the crossover.
Maybe it was probably, it seems like it was fairly calculated. Like I said, those were the lead singles. There was like 7 singles off this one, but I didn't recognize, other than like I listened through them, but like I didn't recognize anything else on the album that I was like, oh yeah, I heard this on the, or I heard this like,
Ed Sheeran duet, Everything Has Changed. You've heard that one?
No, not until I listened to the record.
It was pretty popular. It was pretty popular.
Yeah. But like, you know, when am I going to hear these things? Like I'd have to get into a cab or be at the grocery store or something. Right. Yeah. Like,
yeah, no, but it did pretty well on top 40, I believe. Yeah.
You know, like something has to really crack through to like, you know, to get through to me from the mainstream these days. Like, yeah, I've heard Dua Lipa's, you know, latest single, you know, because like people are talking about it. If I'm listening to a podcast or I'm watching YouTube videos, like people will talk about her or make a joke about her. I'll be like, oh, who's Dua Lipa? You know, now I know, you know, like I wouldn't have known otherwise. Yeah. So, I think there was something interesting about like that they went with the pop songs as the lead singles. So obviously maybe they were already ready to embrace Taylor Swift moving into that pop market. And I think any controversy about it is probably really also a bit of marketing too, you know, get people talking about it. Cause like she was pretty much already making pop records, but it really makes me wonder why this record is so goddamn long.
It is very long. It's 16 songs and like 65 clocks in just over 65 minutes.
And a lot of them were the typical 3 to 4 minute.
When you said she wrote 25 songs, I was like, yeah, that makes sense because there was like 16 on the album. So, I mean, some
I get that you cut them down and a lot of these songs, the other songs eventually ended up on the next record and so on and so forth. Right. And then she keeps writing and I get it. Like, good for her that she's a prolific writer. But let's talk about it. She has one topic, at least on this record. There is one topic and one topic only. And maybe it's a concept record. You know, it's called Red. And she's like, it's about my emotions. I saw a lot of red because I was mad or whatever. She doesn't come off mad on this album much, you know, like more remorseful. But this is almost, I would say, 90% breakup songs with like 10% of lamenting, like, oh, remember when we were together, that was nice, but we're not together anymore, that kind of sucks.
I feel that maybe it's not her doing this, but maybe it's the marketing team, the PR people that surround her, that point fingers at her exes to get that attention, because everybody is a songwriter. All of us are writing about things that have happened to us, bad relationships we've had. We've all done that as writers. It's therapy, right? And it's a good thing to do. But I'm not going to sit there and tell you exactly who I wrote it about, because I don't think that's very classy. But I feel like it's her, probably her PR team that's doing that, where they're dropping hints all over social media that this song's about Joe Jonas and this song's about John Mayer and this song's about all these guys that are high profile that she's dated. And she doesn't stop it from happening.
Right. Like they leak a little information out there just to keep that, like the paparazzi coming around to keep her relevant, to keep her popular.
Yeah.
I don't think she ever explicitly was like, this song is about John Mayer or whatever, but she'll just be like, well, you know, I was in a tumultuous relationship for the last year and people are like, well, you were hanging out with, like the Jonas Brothers. So it must be about, you know, whatever. Right. Like they put two and two together.
I don't believe that she's not like, she doesn't openly say this song is about this person, but I don't believe that she has nothing to do with the hints that are put out there. I think that that's part of just like the intrigue for her fans, that she puts these hints out there, just like Britney puts out messages in her Instagram photos or whatever it is, right? Like I think it's it's very calculated. It's
that's who else Max Martin used to produce.
He produced every huge pop star at some point, Kylie, or wrote Kylie for them.
Yeah, Kylie Minogue. Anyway, yeah, like, that aside though, like, okay, that's the, you know, whatever, that's the PR marketing paparazzi side of things. That's the tabloid news. But like, as an artistic statement, it's like, kind of would have liked a song about anything else. Like, you know, I didn't go on a journey through this record where I was like, okay, this is a story about somebody or about a relationship. This is just like another song that's like,
let's trash this dude.
Yeah, or like she didn't. You know, I wouldn't say she really trashes anybody lyrically on this. Maybe not until a little later in her records. Like even the before this one, that she had that single Mean. You know, and everybody speculated who that was about, and then people were like, no, it's actually about journalists or the paparazzi or whatever, right? You know.
Oh,
like,
okay.
But I don't think there was any, there's no real, maybe there is, I don't know. Like, I guess the only song on here that isn't 100% like a relationship song, but it still mentions relationship stuff, is 22.
Yeah. You know?
And that's about it. But 22 is kind of like a weird follow-up to like 15, you know? It's like, maybe it's for being like, I grew up, but I didn't really, because when we were 22, we still like to goof off and be goofy and stuff like that. It's like, it's less sappy than 15 by far, but like you know, but there's still elements of like, yeah. And then you're 22 and you're in love and you get your heart broken.
It's like, yeah, because she knows who her target market is. Just like you were saying, yeah. It's not you, bud. It's the 22 year olds who are going through all these breakups. Boom,
right.
Nailed it.
No. Totally. That could be it. Maybe she, like, do you think she's thinking commercially when she's writing all these, like, relationship breakup songs? Like, a whole
yes and
album
no.
worth of it?
I think she does think about what's going to sell. I do. But I also think that it is heartfelt. I do think she's authentic. I feel that these are her real thoughts and feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I just didn't like how it was put out there by her team. Too much information. In my opinion.
So what, but like, how does that relate to the, like, the actual music itself? Like, when you listen to it, are you kind of going like, ah, fuck, is this one about so-and-so? And it kind of distracts you from the music?
I think so.
Yeah.
But it depends what you feel like when you go in as a listener. What are you there for?
Yeah. Cause I don't know her dating history at all. I never paid attention. So when I listen to it,
some
I'm
people
want to
hear
like,
the music and they don't care about the paparazzi about- shit, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So as somebody who's just like, just listening and trying to really take this in and, for what it is, I'm just like, you know, okay, like, could we have maybe cut this down to 10 to 12 songs about ex-boyfriends instead of 16 songs about ex-boyfriends where like three or four of them sound exactly the same? Like,
whatever. I wrote tons of songs about ex-boyfriends.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
I will say I also took leaps and bounds and tried to write about other things too.
Yeah, I just think that, like, it was funny when I was doing the research. You know, because I listen through, I always do this. I try and listen through once and get my pure gut reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And then just kind of let that marinate. Like, I don't write down anything, don't make any notes. I just listen. Just like, and then I'll do another dive or two if I have time. I like to sit down with the lyrics and read the lyrics and read the liner notes and read, you know, reviews and stuff like that. And I'll do that once or twice, you know, and depending on how much info there is about, and there's a ton of info out there about this record. And so I found myself doing it two times through, and I just kept noticing that everybody kept talking about how diverse this record was, you know, going on like, oh, you know, all these elements of like, you know, like exploring different genres, like we were talking about earlier, like, oh, there's even elements of like Britpop in here and there's, you know, whatever. And then I was like, by the third listen through, I was like, I'm not convinced. I'm like, as diverse, like, as this album always gets credited, it's like a lot of the time it sounds the same. it's long and it drags, and there's definitely bangers on it, so I was like, why not cut it down to the bangers and just have like a really 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 solid record of like, you have the ballads, you know,
having some dynamics is nice.
Yeah I'm not saying throw all of it out. I'm not saying just put out an EP of like the you know, 3 to 5 like real poppy, you know, radio bangers. I'm saying like, this album is too goddamn long.
Yeah, but I feel like you can say that about a lot of albums, because back in the day when you had to fit an album on a 33 1/3, you have to make some choices. You only have X amount of minutes, right? Even the earlier days of CDs, right? But like now, I mean, no, even CDs got too long. Like, just keep it tight. You know, you don't have to get down to 16 songs. There's too many people putting too many songs on too many albums. That's a blanket fact. You know, there are some people who keep it down to like a dirty dozen or something like that, and that's good. But like, I don't think it's specifically a Taylor Swift problem. I think it's just once you have an open door to put as much music as you want on there, then nothing needs to hit the cutting room floor. You know, you can just put it all out.
Yeah, I guess in an era like, especially in 2000. Especially in 2012, like, we were right in the middle of like the iTunes 99-cent single.
Yeah.
You know,
if I can get a dollar per song, yeah, I'm going to make more money if I put out 16 songs as opposed to 10 songs.
Well, yeah, either this, because you can keep mining a bigger, longer album for more singles, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So once they got through the first three and they go, okay, well, what else? You know, it's like, well, you know, I thought this one had commercial success. We did a little, like, you know, testing of the market, and a bunch of teenagers we played it for seemed to like this song, so we'll make that our next single or whatever. And they just keep doing that. But 16 songs is a bigger well than 10, 12 songs. Yeah. So maybe that's the thinking behind it. But if there's anything I've noticed from, like, listening to tons of records that we've been doing, mm-hmm, is that, man, the sweet spot has got to be somewhere in, like, the 45-minute, you know, like, yeah, 10 to 12 song mark, where it's like, unless you're making your concept artistic you know, grand opus like The Wall or something. Like, that's different. Like, okay, but that's like, that's what it is. You go into that knowing what you're getting into. I get into this and like, man, I'm just like, I keep looking at the track list and going like, am I done yet? Am I done yet? Am I done yet? You know, it wasn't keeping me pulled in. I'm going like, I don't know where this idea of like it being super diverse. It's like, yeah, there's a few songs on here that really stand out and are very different than the rest. So maybe that's where people are like, but I just keep hearing this word diversity, diverse, like this, you know, genre bending album or whatever. And I'm like, maybe it was, if you're expecting one thing from Taylor Swift and then these are the singles you got off the top, that's where that comes from. But
I mean, if you followed her career for the first, the three albums that she put out before this, I think you were expecting one thing and you did get a different thing. So in which case, I do believe that would be considered diverse.
Well, like, you guys, that's just my opinion. Well, like, you guys listened through this record. Like, I don't know. How did you feel? Like, Charlie, you were kind of saying that it was a little too long, but
I do feel like it's long. I still, like, I liked it. You know, it made my pop music ears happy. You know, I dug it. Would I go back and listen to it a ton of times? I don't know. But, like, I wouldn't turn off the singles specifically. But I just found myself enjoying it and having a good time while I was listening to it.
But like front to back, you didn't find it dragged anywhere. You weren't like I said,
it did feel a little long.
Yeah. What about you, Naomi?
I think this is the first album where I heard Taylor Swift songs that I actually felt engaged with to listen to, like the poppy ones, where I actually thought they were nice little earworms and they were fun, like catchy tunes. So I know some of the country interjections in between some of the pop songs kind of bored me a bit, but I think if I'd paid more attention to the lyrics, I might've found it more interesting, which I'm bad at because I don't really pay attention to lyrics.
I don't think that you would have, because I don't know that there was a lot aside from the fact that they were like their breakup songs, you know? So
there's some interesting things on there. And if I had to ask you anything, it would be like, okay. So like I said, right off the top, I'm like, definitely not the target demographic for this. I was never a 22-year-old girl. I was never a 15-year-old girl, you know, like, so, you know, I've definitely had my share of my feelings about relationships and heartbreak and that sort of thing. And people I've been close to, and I've written songs of similar veins or whatever, but like, as somebody who was a 22-year-old girl, like, is there anything you could, you know, take from this where you were like, oh, I feel that, I identify, I relate?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's some relating going on there if I was still that age. And a comment that's made in our chat too is some people have been through some really shitty breakups and need to know that someone else has been in the same position. Finding songs that have lyrics that you relate to what you're going through helps a lot of people, you know?
Right. I can imagine, you know, like an album that is, yeah, like all breakup songs might be perfect for somebody who is going through a breakup. And like,
yeah. I remember going through a breakup once and just like just feeling really down. And I remember I was in my mid-20s and the weirdest thing, it wasn't music that helped me through that or songs. It was actually watching Sex and the City. Because I kind of felt empowered from it.
I don't know that sounds like a weird thing at all. I thought that was, if you would have told me that, I would have figured that was a somewhat standard way of dealing with those things.
It just kind of made me feel like I could take back my power from feeling shitty.
Yeah.
That show. So, but I mean,
I thought that was part of the power of that. Like, the thing of that, why that show was so popular was it was that kind of a giving the power kind of show.
Exactly. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make it sound like it was weird, but I'm saying like I didn't always go to a song to do it. That's just an example of something that made me feel better.
Here's an idea. Sometimes one of the tropes for breakup songs is like, you know, you get broken up with and you go and you find that one song that really helps you or, you know, like gives you the feels and you play that on repeat. Well, you don't have to do that anymore. Taylor Swift made you a whole album. You can listen to 65 minutes and 9 seconds of songs, and then it repeats. So maybe it's saving the ears of the people around you. You don't have to hear the same song over and over and over and over. They just have to hear 16 songs over and over.
I think if you look at it from that point of view of like more of a concept record, like it's called Red because, you know, she was like, I saw Red, I guess. I don't know. Although you'd think that would be, for me, that means angry, like...
Yeah, I think
probably angry. She's seeing red. Yeah,
but I don't know. And it's weird.
Some of these songs sound angry.
So a little bit, but like in the context of the album.
We are never, ever, ever getting back together is kind of an angry. It's in the stages of breakup where you're angry and then you're in denial and then blah, blah, blah.
And then she has these weird little interjections there where she sounds like just a she has that snotty like, ugh. Then he called me and I was like, ugh, don't call me.
Still a young girl.
Yeah, I get it. Like, as a guy hearing that, you're just kind of like, Jesus Christ, okay. But
just stop calling her.
And she's like, God, but we are never, ever getting back together. Like, oh, gag me. Like, she just sounds like such a valley girl all of a sudden. And I mean, maybe she's doing for a little comedic effect or whatever. And like, there's a couple.
That's why I like her two newer albums better, is because she's growing up and I'm starting to get what she's doing more,
Maybe she's catching up to us, right? Because in this context, she's always been younger. I was not 22 in 2012, right? Mm-hmm. Like I don't even know. I can't do the math. I was already old. So, I was never going to relate to Taylor Swift, but I definitely do relate to, those emotions and breakups and stuff like that. And for me, it's not going to be Taylor Swift. It's going to be, George Jones and Hank Williams. Like,
it's just a new balladeer.
Yeah. If you want to hear, guys who put out several albums full of nothing but breakup songs, George Jones is just about as guilty as anybody. Right. So, and I fucking, man, trust me, like, a few too many wobbly pops and it turns into the fucking George Jones show around here. And Amy can attest, because the other day we were in the car and I was cranking some George Jones and she caught herself singing along and she went, Jesus Christ. She's like, I never thought in a million years that I would ever know like any lyrics to like any George Jones songs ever in my entire life. And here I am fucking singing along with George Jones.
Cold shower is like, who's George Jones? I was 8. Basically.
He's who you wish your grandpa was.
Yeah.
All right. So starting to wrap it up here.
I still have things I haven't got to yet.
Oh, okay.
Points I have to make.
Well, then let's get to them. Yeah. You were going to say your good and bad points. So let's do that right now.
I've gone over most of them, but this one is really, I only have one more negative thing to say about her. Okay. Then I got some positive points. Her voice is very basic. She sounds like a demo singer. Like, she sounds like she should be writing these songs for other people to sing.
Ooh, that's kind of harsh, but I like it. I like it.
I mean, it is harsh, but it's a harsh, cruel world. I mean, in the music business, but I mean, there's people who love her voice. Each their own.
Yeah. I just don't get it. No, but I'm with you. Like, on this record, I didn't find that, nails on a chalkboard sound in her voice at all. But, man, there's more than a couple of times where you can really hear the correction, the auto-tune correction on her voice.
I just don't think she's a good singer.
Yeah, it's like, it's my ear picks it up so quickly because I'm just like, there's a singing robot again. Like, if you're a casual listener, you might not notice. And obviously it's on every record you hear on the radio these days. So I think people are just used to that. That's what a singer sounds like now. They don't sound like Janis Joplin anymore, but I don't think if she showed up on karaoke night, she'd probably blow everybody out of the water.
I guess that's a comparison to make.
She's
skilled enough in that regard for sure. But I still think that there's people who could sing in these competitions and in your backyard that are better singers than
her. They could sing circles around her. Yeah, for sure. I agree.
To say some positive things, I think she is a decent role model for young girls. I mean, if she's doing stuff to empower them, that's great. I know that a few years back she had a court case where she took someone to court who grabbed her ass. And she took him to court and she sued him for like $1 or something like that. Like, she didn't do it to make money. She did it to make a point.
Right.
And it's not okay to do that.
Right.
So I really respected her for that.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, no, that is good to be like,
to be a role model. Yeah.
To be a good role model. Cause yeah, you're right. Cause there's going to be girls, I get it. Like, the younger you are, like, the more you just feel feelings, they're so intense or whatever. And if T-Swift is your idol, maybe she's a good one to have, right? Maybe.
Yeah. No, I think there's definitely worse people who could be
that you could be looking up to?
Yeah, yeah. I do feel that she's probably good for the kids. I don't see anything negative about her that way. She doesn't, you know, portray herself in any kind of
She's a serial dater, but like if that's her worst crime, then you know, then
maybe God she's a virgin.
I don't think John Mayer would have dated her if that was the case.
I think it's really cute. Her and her cats are very cute.
Okay.
And
were her cats on this album?
No, but she has really cute cats. Oh, they're like Scottish fold cats. They're adorable. I know one of them's named Meredith, and I can't remember the others. And I'd like to see her write a traditional country album. I really would. I would like to see if she could do that. And that's all I have to say.
Yeah, I'd like to know, like, was she a girl who grew up, like, singing, like, Strawberry Wine or something?
Likely. Like, I imagine, well, she obviously liked Tim McGraw. I imagine that 90s country was a huge influence on her.
Yeah, because that's when she would have, because how old is she now? Like, she would have been a baby. She would have been growing up in that era.
She's about 20 years older than Greg.
No shade to our friend Greg, who just happens to be a toddler. So, I guess I'm just going to read you guys what Rolling Stone had to say. So, like we said before, this is the 99 out of 100 GOATs, greatest albums of all time. Thank you, Charlie. And this is what they said about it. Taylor Swift shocked the world with her fourth album, breaking away from country music to make a record that recalled classics by the Beatles and Prince, and the way it pulled from across the pop and rock landscapes and transported every sound it touched. The lead single, We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together, with stomping, swaying, electro twang. I Know You Were Trouble wrote a dubstep groove, and the title track was a swirl of banjos, dusty guitars, and talkbox elation. Tabloid types tied themselves in knots trying to figure out which song was about which ex, but the real news was Swift's songwriting on high points like the astonishing All Too Well, as vivid a post-breakup remembrance as any artist has ever produced. So, the Beatles, Prince, like, I didn't get any of that from this album, so I don't know, man.
I feel like that's just a sensationalist reviewer's, you know, sparkle. Got to make those words dance on the page.
Yeah. Now, I'll admit that I haven't listened to the first three records. I only know what I heard from, like, singles and, like I said, like, hearing that fucking song 15 over and over again. So, you know, maybe this is a huge departure from what the body of those records were, and I don't know. But I am now curious to go and listen to those latest records, as you had recommended on an early episode of Staff Picks that we did, Naomi. But yeah, I don't know. 99, that's what I really want to know. Does it deserve to be 99, the 99th, like, greatest album of all time?
You know, no.
No, right?
No.
This is what made me think about, was weird about it. I was like, okay. I thought maybe there was going to be this grand artistic statement that I just was like, okay, I slept on this album. Like, and I listened to it and I was like looking for something, but I didn't find it. And then I went back through this list just to go like, well, who's like buried like way back in the 500s or 400s, I guess, because the last album would be 500. And there's these amazing artists who have bigger, more important, more influential pop records, like pop records,
mm-hmm.
you know, that are buried way back there. Lady Gaga's Born This Way is like somewhere in like 400 something. And I'm not a Lady Gaga fan, but guess what? I think that's a much better record than this record. It had a bigger impact on the pop music like landscape at the time. Like, I would say it's a more important record than this record. How the hell did this one end up at 99?
This is a basic pop or crossover album.
Yeah,
it's, compared to that, Shania deserved that spot more, in my opinion, because if you're talking about who did it first, that would be more impactful if it was Shania Twain.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we'll go down the list and find Shania Twain.
And I feel like maybe they were just desperately trying to put something in the top 100 that was somewhat like recent. And so that's what they picked.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know about that. I mean, you definitely have to take into account the people who were taking this survey, right? Like, who were the people that they surveyed to say what the top 500 were, right?
Is that like, what the list is? It's a survey?
Yeah, it's a reoccurring opinion survey and music ranking of the finest albums of history compiled by the American magazine Rolling Stone. Yeah.
Seems biased as fuck. We've got 98 more of these to do or whatever. Don't enjoy this list very much. I find it really biased.
Well, I can tell you that it is based on weighted votes from selected musicians, critics, and industry figures.
Okay. So, yeah, it's industry insiders. It's like the same people who vote on the Grammys.
It's basically the Yardbird Suite. Okay.
Yeah. No, but it's like it's basically the Grammys, and we all know the Grammys are kind of bullshit. So like, So
the Grammys used to be a little more selective.
Yeah, I don't know. Here's what's interesting though, because so
I want to hear what you have to say to that.
Y'all so mad.
What?
I'm seeing red.
Y'all so mad.
You're seeing red. No, I'm surprised. Like, so Charlie, you kind of almost you sound like you're like, man, 99. Yeah, I'm cool with that.
I could, you know what? I would want to take a bigger look at the broader, you know, other what else is before and right after it. But
maybe we'll get more of a scope as we go down for sure.
But I don't find it like a crazy swing because this is the steps that, you know, like she took from to good that took her from like pop country, which whatever you feel about it, that's what it was. Pop country at the beginning, and then this, and then now she shortly after this ascended to being like pop icon. So she went from superstar to icon via this album, right? So pretty it's a much, pretty big thing. It launched her into superstardom.
Okay, sure. Why not? I don't get it, man. I don't know how this is ranking higher than the band. Like the last album we just did. Like if that's our base.
Well,
I can see that.
I would say a good chunk of the people who are probably making these, who are taking these surveys, are younger folk, you know,
and a little more familiar with this than they are with the that could be the case. I don't know.
I'm sure it's somewhat balanced, but like, you know,
hopefully we'll discover things as we move along. But
that's why they need to keep amending this list, because new stuff comes out and younger people take the reviewers previous posts.
Yeah, I mean, okay, look, I don't think it's a bad record, you know.
No,
but I just think it's too commercially bland to deserve the 99th spot. Listen, I think I Knew You Were Trouble. That's a banger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's a song that if I had to listen, if somebody was like, you know, like, hey, you want to throw on some T-Swift? I'd be like, yeah, fucking through that. I Knew You Were Trouble. Actually, there's a couple of really good covers of that song, which I always find that when you can have like a lot of fun, like doing different kind of covers with music, that's usually a sign of a well-written song.
True. Yeah.
Right. Good bones. And then you can play around with like genre and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I know Waka Off the Earth, if you remember those guys, they kind of do like acapella, or like kind of, they always have like weird creative videos, like seven people playing the same guitar, that sort of thing. And they did a version of this that was all acapella with a beatboxer doing the dubstep. Unfortunately, I think that guy passed away. I don't know his name, but I remember I actually kind of got familiar with that because I put it on a few times as like, you know, like this is kind of this like hearing this guy do a dubstep beatbox was pretty great. You know, it was cool. I liked it. So, and that was the I Knew You Were Trouble.
Here's another idea. Here's another thing. How old? So she is 31 now.
Is she? I don't know. She's in her 30s.
If this was put out.
Oh,
in 2012,
recorded 10 years ago.
So she would have been 21 then. So, yeah, well, obviously 22, right? Right there, right? That's the age that she wrote the song. 22 is when she was 22. So, I mean, I think it definitely makes a bunch of sense in that regard.
What, that it would be 99?
No, just like the music in general and like the style and all of it, right? Like the fact that
The record makes sense.
Yeah.
I just don't think it makes sense to be the 99th out of 100 greatest albums of all time.
I wonder how much they're also, I wonder like how well did it sell? How big was it?
Yeah, but that shouldn't really qualify. This should be critical, right?
Oh, I wouldn't it take all the different things into account?
Yeah, but when you keep scrolling down this list, and which I don't want to go too far because I really want to surprise myself, records that sold far less, like records that are almost obscure, have higher spots, right?
Hmm.
So if it was basically a contest of how many copies have you sold, then the two, to like, you know, it would just be Thriller and
Wow,
Dark Side of the Moon.
And, I mean, if we get to the top 10, and
I'm sure those are in there, by the way, Beatles actually, albums.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. How many copies of the White Album have been sold like to this day? Right.
Going
to
turn into a Beatles podcast pretty quick there.
Well, there's going to be some, you know, there's going to be some stuff in between, but I don't know. Anybody else have any last words to say about Taylor Swift's album Red? Now's the time to say it or forever hold your peace.
No, I really shoved my opinion right in there, so I'm good.
I'm pretty sure that's a quote from a John Mayer interview.
Probably.
I just shoved it in there. Anyway. So, okay. Listen, everybody, thanks so much for joining us today. We're going to keep doing this. We're going to have as many discussions about a lot of records. And yeah, we're just going to keep exploring and seeing where this goes. If you want to follow along, we've got all our social medias. That's where you can keep up with what we're doing. You know, anywhere you want, like and subscribe. You can all do that in one spot. We've got a website. Charlie, what is that website?
Well, that website is l2lpodcast.com.
Hell yeah. So just go there to, you know, find what you like. Find the Instagrams, find the Twitter, find the Facebook. It's all there. Find the places that you can actually listen to the podcast. It's all there. But, you know, we keep plugging this, and so far you guys are all chicken shit. Nobody wants to call us and I don't know, tell us off. Tell us that this is the greatest album of all time, and we have no idea what we're talking about. Yep. And, man, swear if you want. We got an explicit warning on this thing,
yeah,
right?
Go crazy. Go nuts.
Won't get us a lot of advertisers, but fuck it. Who cares?
I called the voicemail today just to make sure it was working because there's been nothing. So, folks, come on, leave us a message.
So, Naomi, can you tell people what that number is?
How did they do that, Naomi?
I'm looking for it again. It's always lost.
One of these days you'll remember that we do this.
I thought you guys had it written down by now.
I do have it written down. I can say it right
now.
But
fail at this. Go ahead.
I'd rather just like let you just throw you under the bus for a second.
Go for it. Done.
It's in the chat. All right.
Should I just say it?
It's in the chat.
There you go.
You can call us at 780-851-8785.
Hell yeah. And then, of course, we've all got our own things going on. You know, you can follow what we do, you know, by going like, Charlie, what do you got going on? Just tell people.
Oh, I'll tell you about oldmandesign.com because I got a lot of t-shirts up on the internet and I design a bunch of t-shirts. If you want t-shirts, go to oldmandesign.com. Get yourself some new t-shirts. It's fun to wear some t-shirts, especially when they're new. Go to oldmandesign.com. Get some new shirts.
You know, you keep selling shirts, but I also realize you do like graphic design work. You do freelance and stuff.
It's
like
true.
That.
You need some graphically designed things. I can do that for you.
Yeah, hit this guy up. It's probably the same website, right?
Sure. Just slide into my DMs. Old Man Design.
I mean, as much as I'd want to sell a t-shirt or two, I'm just saying, like, you know, you're limiting yourself. You got more talents than just t-shirts.
Thanks.
Hey, homie, what do you got going on?
I do this podcast called Dope Nostalgia, and we have the upcoming episode where my friend Kendra and I and co-host for this episode, we go over some of the nastiest, dirtiest, sexiest lyrics of the 90s.
Ooh, I think I put my vote in. Do you remember what my vote was?
No.
It's that song, I'm Horny. The lyrics are literally, I'm horny, I'm horny, 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 I'm horny, yes. I'm horny, horny, horny tonight.
Yes, we did talk about that song. Yes.
Perfect. Glad my vote got in there. Okay. Yeah. All right. Does anybody have anything else to say, or are we calling it a night here?
I got more podcasting coming up.
Hell yeah.
Right now.
Well, help us out with our podcasting goals. Go to patreon.com/learningtolisten. Not only will you get to hear this episode that you're listening to right now in its whole uncut, like, you know, ends of the bread and everything form, but you get it early, like a whole bunch of days early. And then you have access to all kinds of stuff that we fucked around with for a long time, just trying stuff out that, who knows, maybe if you start listening to it and telling us, hey, that was all right, why don't you do that again? And maybe we will. But also, the first 99 episodes of this podcast are getting archived slowly but surely. And the only place they're going to show up again is on there. So that's where you can get all that stuff. So patreon.com/learningtolisten. You know, what were you going to spend your money on? You're going to go get a bagel? You're going to go to Tim Hortons and get a shitty bagel and some shitty Tim Hortons coffee? Mm-hmm. Fuck that nonsense. Spend it on us instead, huh? Come on, help us out. The cost a month of what your bagel a day. No, wait.
Hold on.
That math doesn't work out. I mean, you only have to pay for one bagel and coffee to get a month's worth of us. Anyway, whatever.
You really sold it.
Yeah, just patreon.com, okay? /learning.
Hey, man, if you give us, send us some money, we can hire some writers and we can write some stuff like this that is a little bit more, you know, together. Yeah.
Somebody can write me some fucking copy, you know? Yeah. I have to try and improv this stuff off the top of my head all the time. Okay, anyway.
Well, here's an idea, though. Before we close out, what are we listening to next week?
Oh, it's funny you should say that, Charlie, because I don't know. See, here's the problem is that you try and book guests and then they leave you hanging about whether or not they're going to actually show up or not. So here's what's going to happen. Either we have a guest on and I have not 100% confirmed their album yet.
Mm-hmm.
So go to the social media sites, follow along, like those things, and then I'll post it there and you'll find out. If that doesn't happen, we're going to be listening to Lucinda Williams' Car Wheels on a Gravel Road.
Okay.
Was that four greatest album of all time, or you think Lucinda Williams sounds like a goat?
No, that was just for the series.
Because I'm like, that's going to get insulting at some point. Like,
goat, 100 goats. #100 yeah. goats.
We're doing either a Fleetwood Mac thing.
If you listen to Lucinda Williams' Car Wheels on a Gravel Road, eventually we're going to do that record. And then after that, you know, we're going to bring back some of the other stuff. We'll do some staff picks. We'll do some bargain bins. Maybe we'll have some more guests on. But yeah, but that's where we're at. So, okay. That'll do it, guys. Right? We've said everything that needs to be said.
I think that works.
Yeah. Well, let's just get the fuck out of here. What are we doing? Why are we still talking? Wrap it up. Wrap it up.
The music was fun, yeah. And then it got really dark for a while, a little bit anti-establishment.
But the next thing you knew, it was totally fun again.
So many artists came and went and left us wondering, what are they doing now? This podcast isn't about the heavy hitters who are still making millions. It's about everyone else, the ones whose careers didn't really leave that decade and kind of just still live in our memory.
So you mean Vanilla Ice had another song?
We all know what happened to Marky Mark. But what about the Funky Bunch? Who were the KLF? And why did Tammy Wynette record a song with an electro dance band that topped the charts? Two genres that specifically defined the 90s. What were freestyle and New Jack Swing all about? Did you know that Blossom star Joey Lawrence had a huge pop hit? Or that Alanis Morissette had a really hot pop career in Canada before Jagged Little Pill? Special guests will also be joining me to discuss the great era of glitter, grunge, thin eyebrows, hammer pants, and total ridiculousness. We're even setting up some interviews with some of the musicians that define the times.
Okay, so if you're older than 30, you might be sitting here going, man, I totally remember that song, but I have no idea who does that. Well, then you better listen and find out.
I'm Naomi Carmack, host of the Ultimate 90s podcast, Dope Nostalgia. You're going to be busting a move again, coming in early 2020. You want to follow us so that you know when we go live? Check out our Twitter at NostalgiaDope. Or you can find us on Instagram at dope_nostalgia. If you've got a question or you just want to be on the show, email us at dopenostalgiapodcast@gmail.com.